You're listening to Canada Hoops, hosted by Maddie Ireland.
Ballin'. That's right. I'm on a hustling, I'm on a grind. Everything I see, I make it mine. I'm on a hustle, I'm on a grind. Everything I see, I make it mine.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to Canada Hoops. It's your boy, Maddie. Thank you for your continued support. Please keep downloading and sharing us. Tell a friend to tell a friend. Our wonderful guest today represents London, Ontario. She is a former Saunders Sabre Pepperdine Wave and is a three-time Olympian for the Senior Women's National Team for Canada Basketball. We are thrilled to welcome Miranda Iam to the podcast. Miranda, thank you so much for joining us on Canada Hoops.
Thanks so much for having me, Maddie. I'm excited to be here with you.
Yeah, I appreciate that. And like I mentioned before we hit record, you know, big fan of yours and just your contribution to the program and the game, and you're so respected. So it's been an exciting time for us to have you join us. How are things, Miranda? Let our listeners and your fans and the Canada basketball community know how you're doing and just kind of what's keeping you busy right now.
Yeah, things are good. Too blessed to be stressed, although sometimes there's some stressful days that creep in there. But no, I'm doing well. I'm back in London, Ontario, so my hometown. I moved back here after I retired. And honestly, doing some of the same things that I've done for the past 20 years in the high-performance space, but just in a different realm now. So I take some of those high-performance strategies and put them in the professional or corporate space. Because honestly, at the end of the day, we're all trying to show up where it matters most. And I take some high-performance strategies, talk about how we might be able to do that, so reach our goals, better ourselves day by day, and do it in a way that's sustainable. That's what I'm super passionate about, sustainable performance. How do we integrate mental, emotional, physical wellness to accomplish those goals and those aims? So all that means that every day looks different over here. I do a lot of... public speaking. So some days there'll be a keynote, some days I'll be attending an event, or other days I'll be working with personal clients or facilitating a workshop. So every week looks different, but it's kind of exciting. I like it that way.
No, I noticed that you are very busy, and you know, you do the work as a keynote speaker and motivational speaker. And, you know, I thought that was really good to kind of go into your next phase post career. Do you want to plug that? Where can people make contact with you? Do you have a website?
I do. I actually have two websites that I should probably consolidate. But one is just MirandaIam.com that I've had throughout my entire career. You can find a lot of info there and contact me there. And I also have cultivateco.ca, which is essentially the name of my business. So we'll be kind of more of the community and organizational stuff that I do. You'll find lots of information on either of those. Or just follow me on Instagram. That's my most active social media place.
Perfect. I wanted to ask too, I know you started broadcasting a little bit. You were covering the Olympic qualifying tournament for the Senior Women's National Team in February on Sportsnet. I thought you did a great job. That's why I'm bringing it up. And I think a lot of our, you know, listeners in the Canada basketball community enjoyed that. What, you know, do you anticipate more of that? Like, is that something you really enjoyed? Like, we'd love to see you do that again for sure.
Thank you. Yeah, that was a blast. It was a lot of fun. Although at moments weird when you're watching your former teammates and you have to remark on what's going on in a bit of a neutral sense. The one bit of feedback that I did get from the producers was like, you keep referring to Team Canada as we, like we need to do this or we want to see that. I'm like, yeah, we, everybody's watching that is Canadian. So it is right. The greater Team Canada, if you will. But that was a lot of fun. I'd definitely be open to opportunities like that in the future. The one thing around that is I love watching and supporting women's basketball, and there's a little bit less opportunity on the women's side. That is definitely changing. Though I've had opportunities on the men's side that I've turned down just because the I have different focuses and energies. But I'm excited to continue to support the women's game and the burgeoning space of everything that's going on, not just in the space of women's basketball in Canada, but the other sports and the other leagues that are starting and thriving as well.
Yeah, no, it was cool. I mean, I know, I was kind of messaging with some of the players throughout the tournament, just, you know, saying, hey, you know, congrats or support. And then one of them, I forget who it was, but they were like, yeah, Miranda's on the broadcast. Like, they thought that was really cool, right? So, great to see. And, you know, opportunities, like there's been opportunities for former players on the men's side in the media space. So it's great to see the same for you and others on the women's side. Just while we're on that topic with, you know, the eventual qualification of the women's team to Paris this summer and the drama that was behind that in February, maybe just a quick rundown in your opinion as a former player of just what maybe lies ahead for them this summer and what they need to maybe work on and recognize to improve in terms of having success in Paris.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like you kind of alluded to there, that was quite a qualification tournament. They're always a bit exciting, but that was a bit heart-wrenching. Hey, I almost cried on air. I had to keep it together in the last moments as you're watching in suspense. And I'm sure a lot of people at home were really, really into it and waiting to see what the final result would be. But that's indicative of high performance sport, regardless whether it's at the qualification process or at the Olympics. And we'll definitely see that as we go into Paris 2024. It's super competitive. The group that we're in is very competitive. Those are good teams that we've come up against before, but also that you need to prepare accordingly. For I think it'll be really important for our women to get some good face time together to ensure that, you know, we're going to be coming, again, we're going to be coming from our respective professional teams and as well as from the WNBA. There's not a lot of time to get everybody on the same page and running like a well-oiled machine so that it makes things nice and smooth in gameplay. I think it will also be important that we come in healthy as well. That's something that's hard to control. And I think they're working on a few things offensively and defensively, just tightening up reads and ensuring that they get the ball to the right people at the right times, as well as being patient, because international basketball is all about patience, moving the ball, taking the right opportunity at the right time, and defensive transition. So locking down on defense and then making it hurt on the other side, which I think is a strength of Canada basketball that they can exploit. But if we're underperforming in that area, it's going to make it a little bit more difficult. But I think it's a great squad that they have, and I think it's going to be a really exciting Olympics. I'll be looking forward to following along.
Yeah, as will we. And, you know, that's a great summary, obviously, by a former player. I think you really nailed it. Just, the qualifying tournament in February, I believe, was sort of an eye-opener in some ways. So I think they're going to really capitalize to, you know, make improvements and have a better opportunity this summer. Miranda, take me back. Talk about a young you running around London and, you know, just what was it like growing up for you? And did you play other sports? And just, you know, how did basketball really start to take shape for you?
Yeah, I grew up playing all sorts of sports. I come from a very active, sporty family. So we just liked being outdoors, period. I grew up going up to Algonquin Park every summer. We were a kind of a camp family, but also all sorts of sports. I played soccer, basketball, obviously, volleyball. I ran track. I did cross country. Everything. I just enjoyed being outside. My dad played ball at Fanshawe College here in London. My brother also played basketball up to about grade 9. He then got cut from that team and took up break dancing. Nice. Of all things, which is making its debut as a Olympic sport this summer, funny enough. So I'm excited to see that as well. And then my mom grew up running track and coached basketball for years. And as time went on, you know, my height started to come into play. So I focused a little bit more on volleyball and basketball. Got introduced into the Canada basketball developmental team space around the age of 13. So I think it was the summer of grade 8 going into grade 9. I was already 6 feet by that point. And just this raw athletic talent, nothing refined at that point, but obviously right. The coaches saw something in me. And continued from that point with Canada basketball at a developmental stage, but still played volleyball throughout high school. And then eventually knew I had to make a choice, you know, when you're going back and forth. I think about my parents often when I think about this stage of life. Like, how did they have a life carting me and my brother around to all these various practices and games?
They did.
But... they didn't. Yeah. We were their life, which is why I'm eternally grateful to them and try to make it up as much as I can nowadays that I'm older and can do. But yeah, that took me through high school, played club, played with my high school team, and then eventually got a scholarship down to Pepperdine University, where I stayed for 4 years, earned a degree in public relations and psychology, which I promptly put not to use because I turned pro after university.
What, you know, when you see a lot of players right now, like in terms of basketball, a lot of them, you know, whether they're in high school or finishing up, but they really become sort of a one sport athlete. And I always thought, like, when I watch basketball, just being an old hooper too, but like, you can tell players that, you know, who they are, like, they played other sports as well, just in terms of movement and ability. Like, you know, obviously for you, that was probably important, but, you know, how much would you like to just see kids now just sort of try to develop that too, as much as they can? Because I know you need to sort of specialize at some point to really maybe give yourself an opportunity. But, you know, watching you play, like, it was clear, like, you know, you were a basketball player, but also a very good athlete. And I think of a lot of other players in that sense too. Just, you know, if you have a thought on, you know, how crucial maybe that was for you in terms of development.
Mm-hmm. I think a lot about how the landscape of basketball and just high performance amateur sport has changed.
Right.
Just within the last 10, 15 years. And it's almost unrecognizable when you think about the prep schools, and the process is a lot different. High school sports are almost non-existent. It's almost hard to play more than one sport nowadays. And I did find it very key for me, both for the reasons that you mentioned, just physically being able to develop different muscles and responses and even visualization of different planes of seeing how things come together. Yeah. I think that's really key in developing your IQ as a player and your body as a player. I think the other part that we often miss when we have this conversation is just the mental side of extreme focus from such a young age, because I had a very long career in this sport and I focused in pretty young for that time. But a lot of the people that I grew up with burnt out pretty fast because it's a very repetitive sport. It requires a lot of sacrifice and focus. And we have kids who are doing that from the age of 8. Right. So one thing I encourage young people to do, if they're able to play different sports, for sure, encourage that, but also to ensure that they have different interests outside of sport as well. Because especially for women, we see that women and girls, they drop out of sports once they get to a certain age. And you want to ensure that A, they're checking all the boxes, whether it's just socially, that they're feeling like they're in a good place with their sports, or that they're feeling supported, or that not feeling burnt out or mentally exhausted by what they're doing. And I think sometimes we forget the human element of high performance sports, which is important to consider.
Yeah, well said. Great insight. I know your family was an influence in the game, but when you really start really loving basketball, did you have a player that maybe you kind of idolized or looked up to, like somebody whose game you really liked?
Yeah, and I wish I could answer a specific female athlete in this realm. That came later as the women's game got a little bit more popular and I played with some of the best in the world. So my opponents and my teammates became my inspiration there. But growing up, I loved Dr. J's game. So nice. Julius Erving, he was just so smooth in how he played. It looked effortless. And, you know, like, I think he certainly did this more than once, but there is one play in particular where he was, like, on one side of the basket and he basically floated on the other side and did a reverse layup. And that definitely had an impact on me. I acknowledge in the way that I play is a bit modeled after that. My favorite moves is, like, it's a reverse layup. So that certainly had an impact on me as a player.
I love it. When I ask that question, it's, you know, you always kind of get a different answer, different players, people in their community. That might be a first Dr. J on the reference on the podcast, Miranda. So that's nice. That's really cool. You know, you played at Saunders, developed your game, had a lot of success, and you're a great student. I'm just curious how, you know, the recruiting side started to happen for you in terms of go all the way from London and you wind up in Pepperdine. Just talk about, you know, what that looked like for you, your recruitment, you know, offers, and, you know, maybe other schools you were close to considering before you chose to be a Wave.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. That process feels like a bit of a blur, and I'm really, really thankful to my parents that they supported me through that process, because it could be a lot for a high schooler trying to figure out where you want to spend the next 4 years, especially if you're going down to the States, because then you have the element of I'm moving out of my country and far away from this place that I've known my entire life. So they were pivotal in that process. As far as the recruitment process, part of that was facilitated by my involvement with Canada Basketball. So just by virtue of playing internationally since the age of 13, every summer, you're seen at these different tournaments. Also with my club team, although my club team didn't travel extensively in the States, which is then at the time was starting to be one of the main ways to get noticed, but especially nowadays. At the time, there was a guy, his name was Scotty Afool. He was based out of Toronto, and I guess he sent a game tape to Pepperdine, a contact there, to someone who became my assistant coach, Carlton Oliver, and Carlton advocated for me to the head coach, Julie Rousseau, at the time, and they liked my game. They liked me, and again, I'll repeat, I was pretty raw athletically. I was right. A late bloomer. I blossomed. I continued to make 1% improvements throughout my game as I grew literally and figuratively. And so just as an encouragement to people who are maybe not the superstar at this point in their career, you can still have a very successful career if you pay attention and do the work and are coachable and open to learning. It's a marathon, not a sprint, to use a tired cliche, but it really, really is true, especially if you want a long career in this space.
What, you know, just talk about your time at Pepperdine. You know, I know you had a lot of success. Were you just put in their Hall of Fame, or you had your number retired? Like, just correct me on that. I missed. Sorry, go ahead.
No, that's exactly it. Yeah, just last month, I think it was, I returned to Pepperdine, and I was inducted into their Hall of Fame there. So that was really, really meaningful. My parents flew down as well. I got to see a bunch of teammates that I hadn't seen in probably a decade plus. And so it was a great moment to reflect on my time there. And I always say, as an athlete, you clearly don't do this alone. There's so many people who have poured into you, whether it's your teammates, your coaches, support staff, all of those people who keep you healthy and motivated. And I was reflecting on my time at Pepperdine. I learned a lot. And the NCAA is a great system. And it was definitely baptism by fire my freshman year, learning a lot and increasing my basketball IQ there. So that was a really important part of my career for sure.
Yeah, well, I mean, your time there stands out. I know you earned All West Coast Conference player three times, all academic honors. So you were a baller and a scholar, you know.
Ooh.
Yeah, yeah.
Nice rhyme. I haven't heard that before. Yeah. I love it.
I'm a nerd. I've used that a few times, so I don't know. Yeah, I know. Just like you just referenced, like your time there when you got put in the Hall of Fame. You know, just what is there any specific memories you really remember? Just being a Wave, like just anything really stand out as a student athlete there?
I certainly remember the 6 a.m. workouts on the track in preseason, yeah. Or on the baseline. As painful as they were in the moment, I look back, and my fellow teammates as well look back on those moments really fondly and with a lot of laughs, because those are the moments when your character is built, you learn your limits, and that what you think is your limit, you can in fact surpass. So you start to see a little bit more of what your potential, which is illuminating. And then that's also when those friendships and that camaraderie that's so inherent to the basketball experience is formed, where you then have to sacrifice your body for the person next to you because you need to make that time. And sometimes as a fast person, which I was fast for my position, you have to finish your sprint, go back and grab the person who's behind you and throw them across the finish line. But all of those are, as like I said, as painful as it is, some of those moments that you look back fondly and you're like, oh, I did that. And that's how confidence is built, I'd say.
Yeah, no kidding. I love that. I think I've asked the past few guests just in terms of, you know, the NCAA and how the landscape has changed, especially when it comes to the women's game and the rise of it, the popularity, when you have an athlete like Caitlin Clark really putting on a show for the game. And then you factor in the transfer portal and the NIL factor. Do you have any thoughts on that, Miranda? Like, because it's just changed college basketball a lot for that student athlete now, and the programs as well, obviously. Just I'm wondering if you have any kind of thoughts on the whole landscape right now.
Yeah, so many thoughts, Maddie. It's a whole different landscape with all of the changes that you've mentioned. It's a lot more fluid and dynamic with the portal as people are going to different places, whereas before, essentially, you signed and you stayed in a place. It's starting to replicate a little bit more the professional sphere before you go from officially amateur into professional, which I think for the women's side is really beneficial. The NIL specifically in the States giving female athletes an opportunity to leverage their brand, especially because as professional athletes, we know obviously there's a pay discrepancy between the men and women's side. But the interesting part of that is most of our earnings can come from that leveraging our brand to either get partnerships, to get sponsorships, or to bridge that into another passion project that you have. And so being able to develop that at school actually is really useful for that long-term kind of longevity of career, whether you stay in the sport or not. So I think that's really interesting, and we'll start to see how people take advantage of that in the long term.
Yeah, well said. It's an interesting time, and you look at some of the movement where a player only plays 1 or 2 years at a program and goes to another program and doesn't have to sit out the year now. And yeah, with the earnings factor, like, you know, Caitlin Clark, you know, for an example, is going to, she's made more at Iowa than she will with her, you know, contract in WNBA. And, you know, Nike just signed her like $28 million, you know, so great for her and other women that are going to follow as well. So I think, you know, there's benefits for the athlete. Some of the programs now are starting to see some players stay longer now, more on the men's side, I guess, just in terms of, because the money is consistent with the NIL offer at that school rather than going pro. So, yeah, mm-hmm. it's a wild time. You know, what did turning pro look like for you, Miranda? You leave school and, you know, you're looking at different leagues and opportunities. Just talk about the transition to your pro journey.
Mm-hmm. Well, I should preface that by saying a lot of Olympic athletes know that this is something they want for a long time. Right. There's people who have been dreaming about the rings since they were 5 years old. That was not the case for me. As I mentioned, I like sports and I was good at it. I saw going on a scholarship to the States a great opportunity for me to get an education for free. So there's the pragmatism. You can see my logical side come out. But also, there were some opportunities that came from that. So I say that to say, I initially thought I was going to go into university to play and then, you know, go and get a job or something. But as I continued to pour into this sport called basketball, you learn to love it more and more and more. And I found that each consecutive year, that has happened throughout my career. And I'm very thankful for that, because that's not always the case. And so when I graduated, or when I was getting ready to graduate, I was thinking, okay, like, let me try this overseas thing for like a year to get some experience. I'll get to go overseas. And also at that time, I had been with the national team. I think it was under 21, they called it. Yeah. And then, so I was just on the cusp of making the senior team. And I was like, you know what would look really good on the resume?
Yeah.
Olympian.
Yeah.
And I thought, like, that, what an incredible opportunity to play for your country at that next stage. I had already done it at the developmental level. And so that actually became a real possibility. And I knew I needed to go overseas to make that possible, to continue to build those skills. So that was my motivator at that point. And so I got an agent through my head coach at Pepperdine at that time. And she got me a job in Turkey, which is a great league for women's basketball. So I went over to a tiny town called Alanya, which is right on the southern coast of Turkey on the Mediterranean Sea, which is basically a place for older British and German folk to retire to, because it's a really nice spot. But they had a team there. And so that was my first experience playing overseas. It was great. My coach was a little intense, I will say. Yeah. So that was a good experience to have, I'd say. And great teammates as well. And then my second year, I went to Istanbul University, which is, it is a university, but they also have a professional team. So I got to spend a year in that great metropolis that is Istanbul. last year was at Orduspor. So it was in the northern part of Turkey, right on the Black Sea. I've been spoiled with these locations throughout my career. I don't know what's going on.
Yeah.
But yeah, after that first year, I also got an opportunity. I was invited to a WNBA camp at that time, training camp down in Tulsa Shock. When we had a team in Tulsa, Oklahoma, which was a great opportunity, made the team, didn't last for very long, got replaced, but it was a really great opportunity as well to be able to see that side of things in the WNBA. And I love that this space, especially for Canadian players, has expanded in the past several years. Because at that time it was a little bit difficult to play WNBA and to play for Team Canada as well. I think even now people don't realize that our women's players who are in the WNBA get fined when they come and play for Canada because they're missing pro games. So there's a lot of decisions that go into that. You kind of have to decide your priorities in that space. But yeah, those first few years were spent in Turkey, and then the last 8 years of my professional career was spent in France, which has become my second home, and feel very fortunate to have been able to play there as long as I did.
I wanted to ask about the French league because I know through the course of it, there's been a lot of Canadian players that have spent a lot of time there, and anyone that we've talked to on the podcast about it, they've raved about their time because the league is a strong league. They run it well. And, you know, a lot of the women from Canada, some of them will speak French, so it's easy to kind of get by there. Just talk about your time there. And did you play with other Canadians at all? Did you have them as teammates? I'm just curious about that. But just talk about your time in France, Miranda.
Yeah, I loved my time in France, obviously, which is why I kept re-signing for 8 years. My first 2 years were in Toulouse, which is south central France, and then my last six were in Mont-de-Marsan, which is like an hour 15 from Bordeaux in the southwestern region of France. So all of my time was spent in southern France, which is important because there's not a lot of teams in southern France. Most of them are central to northern France, which is where all my other teammates were. So they got to see each other a lot more often than I did, but I did get an opportunity to play with Catherine Plouffe, which was a lot of fun. And obviously we would see our teammates at least two times in the year when we played home and again and away against all of the teams. And you're right, the quality of life in France is very good. The league is very competitive. And it's also, and you'll hear this, I'm sure you've heard this from other athletes that you've spoken with, sometimes the professional space can be a little hit and miss as far as how it's run, whether it's done professionally, whether it's done legally, whether you actually get all the money that you were promised.
Right.
But in France, it's actually governed by all the laws that it should be. And so you're insured that you'll receive your full pay. We have to pay taxes as everybody does. So that's reduces the wage that you can get in France. So that might defer people, like might throw off people from playing in France, but you also know that you're going to get all of that as well as all of the other things that you want out of a job. So benefits, retirement, et cetera, et cetera. So that's just something that I didn't think about before I signed in France, but is important in the long run for players who are considering that.
Well, hopefully if we have maybe a young listener or a player that's listening, and then they can use that as information when they're looking at their pro stop as well. Miranda here on Canada Hoops. We love to talk about Canada basketball, especially with guests who have played for the program. You know, for you personally and your outstanding career, you know, where does playing for the senior women's national team rank for you?
Oh, goodness. It's number one. It's why I do what I do. And it's slightly ironic or interesting, given what I've shared of my background. I kind of like stumbled onto the sport and wanted to get a good degree and like, let's try this basketball thing. I was never ball is life. And yet I'm so overwhelmingly passionate about Canada basketball and playing for my country and having the honor to represent people, because I know we are very blessed to be in the country that we are. I've traveled not everywhere in the world, but very many places, right, and know how blessed we are in our country. And so I'm very proud to represent Canada in that respect. And just, you know, like the incredible woman that I've played with, the program that we've built. When I started with the team, we were about maybe 20th or 24th in the world. Now we are ranked fourth or fifth. Things are changing as qualifications come in, but regular medal contenders going to the Olympics every 4 years. I'm very proud of the work that the program has done. And in a different sense as well, like with the last Olympics, being able to literally carry the flag into the stadium and represent the larger team Canada, that's something that will forever be a highlight of my career, being able to bear the flag in the opening ceremonies. And it's the reason why I played basketball as long as I did. If I didn't have that goal to play for my Olympic team, I wouldn't have continued to play overseas for that amount of time. I believe that was the main motivator and my greater why through it all.
Awesome. I wanted to ask you about the flag bearer for the 2020 game, but it was 2021 in Tokyo. Like, how did that come about? Did you know it was a possibility? Like, does Canada basketball like submit? Like, does every sporting body for the Olympic team, like, submit a name? Like, just talk about that coming to fruition, I guess. Mm-hmm.
It was certainly not expected. When I got the call from Marnie McBean, I was actually in Japan. We were there early, just getting prepped and getting habituated to the time zone and all of that. And I mean, what a surreal experience, right? I saw the name on my phone. First of all, I'm like, why is Marnie McBean calling me? What's going on? Right. And then you have the conversation and then it starts to settle in. Definitely cried tears of joy after that call and called my parents and that's about it, because I couldn't talk to anybody else. It's very hush-hush until they announce it.
Right.
And but the selection process, I'm not quite sure if there's a specific requirement and who contributes names and all of that. I know, obviously, you get to that level and people want to ensure that people are being represented by something that aligns with the values of the team and the program and the committee, the Canadian Olympic Committee. I think also at that time, we were mid-pandemic. Right. And people really needed a sign of hope and togetherness, which I believe is why they selected two team athletes. Because oftentimes people who bear flags are individual athletes, not all the time, but often. And I think there was a concerted effort to show just the unity that was felt to be needed at that time. But again, I don't know the specific logistics of it. I'm honored to have been selected for that and to co-flag bear with Nate Hirayama of the Rugby Sevens. It was a great experience for sure.
Yeah, no doubt. I think, you know, the Canada basketball fans love seeing that. And I know, like, after the recent qualification in February for the women's team, like, there was a lot of talk and support and push to maybe have Natalie Achonwa do it. You know, like, this will be her fourth Olympics. Let's go with another senior women's team player. Like, that would be, well, in my opinion, just super great, right? So we'll see if that pans out. You know, you mentioned, you know, your time at the program, so many great players and teammates you had. You know, I know you have close teammates and friendships with so many of them. Like, just, I'm wondering about the conversation you would have as a group, Miranda, when you would come together after like a long pro year, but you know you have to commit sacrifice for the national team, and it's almost not a question of doing it. The women always answer the call to really, you know, play, rise, and lift the program. Like, what were those conversations like? Because it could have been easy for a lot of players in those situations to be like, you know, I just had a really long year overseas. Like, I'm tired, I'm sore. But without that commitment, like, the women, you know, the program wouldn't be where it's at. I'm just curious about those conversations, or if it was more like an action thing everyone was doing.
Mm-hmm. It requires both the conversations, okay, and then the subsequent action for sure. And that kind of buy-in and commitment is definitely birthed out of desperation and grittiness. So when I mentioned earlier, we were definitely sub 20 ranked at that time. There was an element of, you got to get in or get out, like, commit, you're all in, you know, you're not going to see the light, you're not going to get the glory. So what are you doing it for? We're doing it for each other. We're doing it for the country. And so that's what it was birthed out of. And we were very intentional with the conversations that we had coming into camp. There was always a coming together and assessment of, okay, what are our values? What are we expecting of each other? And what does that look like? So it's nice to have the mission statement of what we're expecting. And we can see this in the sport world. We can see it in the corporate world. Regardless, you can do it individually as well. These are conversations that I would recommend that you have. So right. What is the greater purpose and the focus? But also, what does that look like on a daily basis? What does it look like, sound like? What am I going to see with my eyes and hear with my ears that reflect that value? So you can say, we want to be the best team and we want to compete and we want to qualify for that. But what does that look like for me as an individual? Okay, I'm going to show up. I'm going to be prepared when I come to practice. I'm going to have my notepad when I come to film and make sure that I get to film in the first place. I'm going to cut super hard. I know I need to do this in my specific role. I'm going to high five my teammates. I'm going to be really loud in what I communicate. And sometimes when people are building a culture, because that's really what we're talking about, we speak about it in generalities, not in specific actions. And that's what takes it from this dream world into actuality.
Yeah. Well, I mean, look at where the program's at now, and it took everyone to do that, you know, as a group and individually. I just think, you know, you and so many others have just made that effort and sacrifice to really push this along. Like, I had Allison McNeil join us a few episodes ago, and you know, talking about the end of her time in 2012, but knowing that the program was going to go to new heights with the group that was there and into the next 4 years and so on. So it's just really cool to see. I know a lot of great teammates over the years. Like, who did you really become close with and have good friendships with from your time with the national team? Anybody kind of come to mind?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'll answer that in a question in a second, but you just made me think of I wanted to co-sign what you just mentioned, because when I was describing the culture building there, right, that started with, well beyond, but also concertedly, intentionally, I was envisioning the time that we had with Allison McNeil, specifically the 40 days and 40 nights that maybe you heard about, yeah, when we were like really grinding it down at Fraser Valley. And that laid the groundwork, and then subsequently with Lisa Tomaitis, and we've had great sports psychologists and mental performance consultants who have brought all of this together. So this isn't just the players showing up and being like, how do we want to show up? For right, sure, we participate and facilitate in those discussions, but the staff, the coaches, everybody has bought into this. And as well as like our supporting staff, our physios, they show up, you know, our doctors, everybody in that space. So yeah, it's a great culture, and I think the key to success in this next phase will be to ensure that, to not take that for granted now that we're at a comfortable space, because again, it's birthed out of that desperation, that the underdog life. And once you get to a comfortable space, it can sometimes be a little bit dangerous. So continuing to keep the focus there. But to your question around the friendships that are built, I mean, I try to stay in contact with most of my teammates, whether it's via social media or just a text here and there. I'm not a super great texter, I'll be honest, but most of us aren't. But when we're in the same place and we get an opportunity to connect, whether it's a Canada basketball event or some of us are in Toronto, we do take advantage of that. And it's the kind of a relationship that, you know, even if you haven't seen each other for months, years, it's still the same sort of openness because you lived something with them.
Yeah, I know you're still pretty connected to the program. I know you've done events for Canada basketball, and then obviously you've seen the recent version of the women's team at the qualifying tournament. I'm wondering, when you watch some of the players now, and you were teammates with some of them that are still playing, obviously, but is there any maybe new players that have come onto the senior women's team that have really impressed you, where you're like, wow, this is going to be a top player for us for years? Has anybody kind of come to mind?
Yeah, I think I'm excited about this new wave of young blood, as we call it.
Yeah.
I think it's a great balance between some vets, some people. I think it's a good balance. You need the vets, you need the young people, but you also need some of the people in between. So mid-20s kind of vibe, who are in the middle of their career. And I think right now the team has a good makeup of that. Victor has done a good job of bringing people in and starting to change a little bit and tweak a little bit the speed with which we play, and infusing a little bit of Spanish style in there, which I love.
Nice.
And I think some of the young players that they're bringing up are kind of fit well into that system. So whether they're on the team right now or still in some of the developmental teams, because there's some players who are showing up down there, we have a great pool of talent to draw on over the next few years. So I'm pretty excited for this new class.
Yeah, well said. There's some players that are coming up through the program that are some serious players. So, and some of them have had time already with the senior women's team due to injury or just other players weren't available. But yeah, it's good to see the strength of the program. I think everyone's pretty excited about that. Miranda, do you have a top five or favorite five of all time for Canada basketball? And you can put yourself in there if you want to.
Oh, goodness. I don't know how you get away with asking this question, because I played with so many players that to have to choose is so difficult. But
no pressure.
I feel, yeah, I'll try to mix it up a little bit and bring some old heads in from people that I've played with throughout my career. Oh, this is tough. I might go with like a smaller guard front. I'm going to start with Shona Thorburn, who isn't very, very short, but I loved her as a point guard. Right. I also played with her in France, and she was also my coach in my last couple of years, my assistant coach. So I've been with her for quite a while, and a great passer, great decision maker. Made me a better player with how she played. In a similar sense, Maya Marie Langlois, a point guard as well, but we're doing a little baby front here with really great ball handlers, distributors. I love people who know the game, know the flow of things. And so in that sense as well, Kim Gaucher, great player, great cutter. Great leader as well. I won't put myself in there. But I'll watch these guys play. This one's tough when you get to my posties. Because we have some great players. I really enjoyed playing with Tamara Tatum. She's just like this great athletic force that just makes something happen out of nothing sometimes. And it's been wonderful watching her transition into the world of coaching now at UFT. And then the last one, I mean, Natachanwa is an easy choice there, but I played with her for a long time as well, because she came in when she was very young. So Maybe we'll leave it with Nat as our five.
Yeah, I know. Well done. That's a great five, and definitely some big time legends for the program. And Kim has joined us. That was a conversation we liked a lot. And Kim's pretty much in a lot of fives, you know. And I know Sammy Hill showed you love. She put you in hers. So it's a question that I love to ask, right? And it is very hard. I try to set people up to give them that ahead of time, so it's not too much pressure. But There's so many great players, right? Like on both sides for the women and men. So it's not an easy thing. Who do you think should join us on the podcast, Miranda? Who's got a good Canada basketball story to share with everyone?
Mm-hmm. Well, if you're interested into getting into the nitty gritty of, well, both her story and also basketball, what it looks like now and what it might continue to look like, Shona Thorburn, former point guard. Have you had her on yet?
No, I have not. No.
Okay. And she's a FIBA broadcaster, commentator, very much has a pulse on everything that's going on internationally and domestically. Could be interesting. I think you guys would have a good conversation.
Yeah, well put. I agree. Any shout outs or thank yous before I get you out of here? And again, truly appreciate this. It's been a lot of fun, and I was looking forward to this.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me, Maddie. I really, really appreciate it. Love sharing my story, but the greater Canada basketball story, and I think people are more and more interested in it now. It's a perfect timing leading up to Paris 2024. Right. With our men's and women's and 3x3 teams who are going, so all across the board. No specific shout outs at this time, but I try to consistently thank the people who have poured into me, like I was mentioning earlier, and got me to this point in my career, recognizing that a win for one of us is a win for all of us, and just continuing to try to lead like that. Excited for the future of Canada hoops, and excited to see your future guests that you have on.
Well, we appreciate that, and well said in terms of the program. Just an exciting time, and it's been an honor to sit down with everyone, especially you today. And we look forward to what lies ahead for Canada basketball and yourself and others. And all the best, Miranda.
And you know what? I will actually mention one more thing before
we jump off here.
Yeah. I just want to thank you, Maddie, because I know you're passionate about what you do, about basketball in general, but it's people like you who have supported the program and us individually for a long time. And that's not unseen and is very, very appreciated. And I think the growth of basketball in Canada is in a large part due to you and your peers. So thank you for what you do as well.
Well, I appreciate that. You're being kind. But yeah, no, it's been a lot of fun, Miranda. Like I've watched the program for a long time, and then the podcast kind of came to fruition. And, it's just been really cool to sit down with everybody, and just hear their stories. And, it's something that, the program and, the game itself has done a lot for me. Like basketball kept me out of a lot of trouble probably as a kid. And I owe the game a lot, I feel like, and the relationships and the connections. Right. And thank you very much. We do appreciate that.
Thank you.
Thank you. That does it for another episode of Canada Hoops. I want to thank Miranda Ayim for pulling up. Thank you for listening. Remember to rate and review us wherever you get your podcast. Keep supporting Canada basketball, and we will see you on the next episode.
Thank you for listening to Canada Hoops.